Good morning. Promised Rhea I wouldn't talk about pipelines or Mayor Rob Ford. So for those of you who do not know, the relationship is really quite significant. On the economic side, we are each other's largest trading partners. When you think of this, it's not just Canada buying American goods and U.S. buying Canadian goods. It's an integrated production system. Just think of over $1 million a minute crossing that border. There's more than pipelines, and there's more certainly than the mayor involved here. This is true in the energy relationship as well. We have a very, very significant energy relationship. Canada is the largest supplier of energy to the United States, and this is across the board. Not only, certainly, we hear a lot about oil, we hear a lot about gas, but clearly on the electricity front, we're the largest supplier into the United States. As well as uranium for nuclear. The numbers are significant, and the renewable relationship needs to be kind of seen within this larger context. Now, this type of relationship requires a great deal of infrastructure that ties that relationship together and makes it able to function and be efficient for each other's production and distribution. In terms of Canada's energy profile, although there's the image of Canada as being very hydrocarbon intense, we have huge hydroelectric generation capabilities and capacities. So while renewables certainly are growing and have been focused on very extensively, there is certainly a very strong renewable base already there. That infrastructure issue certainly came home when August 14th in 2003. At the time, President Bush was accusing Canada, Prime Minister Chrétien was accusing the United States. In the end, it was a bunch of squirrels out in Ohio. However, while certainly the results of this event led to a very a reinvigorated reliability structure through a NERC, and it was really a transmission problem. To the extent that transmission, generation, and distribution are interrelated, and to the extent that this transmission problem was a binational problem, these issues are binational in context, and we have to keep them in mind. So let me go on to deal with some of the Canada-U.S. public opinion in terms of dealing with binational energy dynamics. In terms of North American energy cooperation, there is a very high support for greater cooperation on energy policy, binational. So within the United States, you've got 86% support. In Canada as well, 69%. And this is polled over about the last 10 years. It's fairly consistent. There is great support for greater cooperation. Even when you put Mexico in the mix, while it's slightly less, there still is certainly support. In terms of North American environmental standards, both Americans and Canadians have common environmental standards between countries. They feel it's quite important, right? In a similar pattern to the energy cooperation results, the level of intensity of importance of cooperation between the U.S. and Canada was higher in the U.S. and also higher than the intensity of importance of cooperation between the U.S. and Canada. What is clear is that there's very strong proportions of the populace see cooperation as an important element of the environmental policy mix. Now, when we went and looked at renewables, there is clearly support within the U.S., very strong support, and certainly within Canada for renewable energy supply. At the same time, we did some polling as well that looked at natural gas over coal. Natural gas certainly has higher support than coal. But of note, it has to be understood that across the board, there is still a majority of Canadians and Americans that still think that encouraging coal and nuclear was important or somewhat important. We have to keep that in the back of our minds doing policy work. In the U.S., there is clear and significant public appetite to encourage renewable energy. The public would support strategies that favor renewable energy as the broader policy mix. The interesting dynamic here as well is when we're looking at energy sources and environmental standards. When we did polling, these polls were done last year sometime, clearly there is support for hydrocarbons if they are meeting environmental standards. So in that context, what we find is that based on public opinion, one can surmise that a majority of the public is likely more focused on the ability of an energy source to meet a particular environmental standard rather than picking winners and losers where specific sources of energy are actively discouraged. This is actually very important. I'll come to this a little bit later. Now, given this public opinion context, let me quickly turn to some concrete examples within the Canadian experience. It's certainly different, but on the Canadian side, fairly large hydro. While, and of note should be that while there's large hydro in Canada, a lot of that is certainly Quebec and Manitoba. Ontario certainly has a lot of hydro, but it is heavily nuclear. If you look at that mix, New York and Ontario have, while different makeup or different profiles, they have certainly a similar kind of differentiated source of supply. Let me very quickly turn to Ontario. There's a very significant change from 2003 to 2013. That is rooted in, or the policy decision to get rid of coal. And in Ontario, what we've done is make a very aggressive move to eliminate coal within generation. And where this came from was the Green Energy Act of 2009, which looked to expand renewable production, encourage construction, or encourage conservation, create green jobs. And really the root of this is the feed-in tariff program. As recently as this year, the long-term energy plan for Ontario is that renewables will account for 46% of Ontario's generating capacity. However, there are some challenges that are unfolding, and part of that has to do with price. There is, without going into too, I don't have time to go into too much details on the challenges, large commercial purchasers are feeling the pain at the moment. Rates have risen to a point where Ontario has the highest industrial rates in North America. And you can see, for those of you in New York, you can see where this is actually fairly interesting. Whereas New York's rates were much higher, this is about 2004, you can see where things are changing. Now, this is certainly not due solely to the feed-in tariff issue or the green energy policy. There are certainly some issues on legacy costs with nuclear. However, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop at the moment because Ontario's program and policy is taken from Germany's. And the signs are, for the future, are not so good. At the moment, the German experience is being very, very heavily impacted. While they've had a longer experience with this, their feed-in tariff program has led to guaranteed rates for renewable power. The intention, of course, was to create low-cost energy, jobs, new investment, and in a competitive environment. The recent report has indicated that the feed-in tariff has failed as an industrial policy. And the difficulty in Germany is that it's starting to impact social policy, meaning they're looking at energy poverty at the moment. This is a real challenge for this type of policy implementation. In terms of a path forward, from our research, we're seeing that open source policy making for energy and the environment is really the best way to go. And what that means is a simple statement to say, don't wait for the feds. Certainly New York State is doing this. They're working very, very well at this. But what I would like to say is we need to deal with intermestic issues. These are dynamics which are both domestic and international in a cross-border context. At the same time, what we're looking at is winners, losers, and energy choices. It is very difficult to pick winners and losers on a 20 or 30 year time frame. Really, the proposals are to ensure that government cultivates innovation within the technological context and really cultivates an innovation ecosystem. The last item from our research is that we really do need to start talking about a national carbon policy dialogue. This is a very sensitive issue, there's no doubt, but without a price on carbon, without a sense of what that economic value is, it would be very, very difficult. Let me also give a shameless promotion of our regional efforts in this regard. The Great Lakes Sustainable Energy Consortium has been in place for the last, I think, about 6 or 7 years, really as an effort to bring engineering research, policy, and regulatory research together within a binational context, and really looking to address that sustainable energy triangle, I think, that was spoken of a little earlier. Thank you very much.